This is the Dave Glover Show with Dave, Rachel, and Kevin. Sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX, a few minutes past 4 p.m. Think Tank was supposed to be yesterday, but Andrew's mom's wake was last night. We took off a little bit early. Thanks again to Hancock and Kelly for filling in for us. That was very sweet of them. So we have Think Tank today. We have David Barklage, who's with us a lot. We have Alderman Kara Spencer, who is with us more and more, a friend of the show. We appreciate that. Good to see you guys. Welcome back.
Thank you for having us.
You look too laid back and tan. What's going on?
I have a tan. I go to a tanning bed so that people actually don't think I work. So hopefully then I can get ahead.
Fair enough. I appreciate your candor.
It really is. You're like, have you been to Florida? It's like, no, I've been down about three blocks. I shake and bake a couple times a week. And everybody thinks I'm rested or relaxed and I'm just that much of a badass. But in fact is, I'm always running and catching my tail.
Good for you. I love it. So, Kara, the mayor did the state of the city, like the state of the union. And I know these things are always optimistic. You're not going to come out and say, like, we're all just hosed. Let's get the hell out of here and go to Belleville. What did you think, though? A little overly optimistic?
Well, look, I mean, I think the city has a lot going for it. But, I mean, yeah, we really do have some issues. You know, I was a little bit surprised that we didn't talk about, you know, some of those very obvious glaring shortcomings. You know, we just had a really, really damaging national article come out, you know, obviously the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, I think it's important when talking about the city's future to talk about where we are and the challenges that we are having.
What were the primary points of the journal article? What were they trying to say?
You know, I mean, the Wall Street Journal really talked about, I think, you know, the stagnant, the issues, I suppose, with our downtown, really focusing on the challenges that we're experiencing right here in our downtown, which really should be the heart. It is the heart of our region. And the health of the downtown area really dictates the success or failure of St. Louis.
So help us to understand this. And Dave, you jump in whenever you want. Is this more of an issue of, we just don't have any great ideas? We got the money, we just don't have any great ideas. Or do we have the ideas? We kind of know the formula. We're just not putting them into action.
I think there's a handful of things going on here. For one, we really are segmented. You know, we are really, you know, city, county, then you have all these municipalities, you have St. Charles, you have all these areas that are, we're not working together. And the failure to work together, that failure really results in, you know, the division of all of our resources. And we're fighting against each other instead of banding together collectively, kind of going out to conquer the world.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, so that's a big, big problem. But I also think here in our city, you know, to be a successful city, we have to have a strong foundation. And to me, that looks like a robust infrastructure. And we're failing to invest in that. We've been failing to do that for a very, very long time. And to me, that infrastructure looks like roads, lighting, but it also looks like public safety. It looks like the underpinning of a successful community. And we're not investing in that in the heart of our region like we should be.
I didn't know if I should call her the good cop and I'd be the bad cop. If calling any city politician a cop is actually a good thing, and I don't want to hurt her politically. But look, I'll start at the very top. And that is that one, Tashar last time liked to point a lot of blame. And at some point, you can't talk about blame, so then you just talk about what's good. And so I see this as a transition into dissent. That first is you blame everybody. Second is you lie and say everything's good. And then third, hopefully you don't get reelected. But, you know, I think you're right. Cooperation is critical. But one of the things that I found, and we're recently a success legislature, that several of the county commissioners or executives from the surrounding area banded together and got a $50 million appropriation passed for a regional police training. And their concept is to have the city of St. Louis, the county of St. Louis, and all those to have one vote and be equals. I have found in regionalization, the problem with it has been that it's been St. Louis city-centric or Democrat-centric, whereas I find that if there are less congressmen in local government and more managers in local government, people care about trash, care about, well, I mean, you know, the things that matter, policing, all those kinds of things. And it isn't that social justice doesn't matter. Of course, that's absolutely critical. And I respect that, especially in these diverse communities. But we've got to work on trash, on development, on jobs, all those things first that are local priorities, but they get lost. And we see the same thing in state legislature. Republicans are terrible. They want to talk about transgender. They want to talk about all these issues, but they don't want to talk about infrastructure and the things that are meat and potatoes. So I think that you've got to change the discussion, one. And two, there has to be a cooperative understanding that we need a regional model that of equal partners, and it's not partisan, because then you have, I think your ideas, for example, if you took away partisan or being a Democrat, and you come to the table with a Steve Elmenwinter, I think you all would accomplish giant things if you were mayor. Because you're not worried about, you know, the partisan politics or those things, but if it was about roads or those things or policing, I think huge things would be done. And as a guy from Cape Girardeau that looks at this region's biggest problem is itself. I mean, I don't see anything outwardly competing with the region as much as the inner region competing against itself and just refusing to cooperate, refusing to come together with good ideas. We cannibalize anybody that starts to succeed. Chris Goodson, he's a guy who's invested his whole life as a developer in the city, and he had a financial stumbling recently, but he was putting grocery stores, addressing the issue of urban, you know, these vacant areas for urban. And everybody wanted to throw him under the bus, yet the guy, his heart and soul is St. Louis. You know, and you see a lot of people like yourself that are really dedicated towards St. Louis.
Well, I mean, I'm going to push back a little bit just because, I mean, I don't think you're wrong, but, you know, I do think that
people say I'm right.
The state could do a lot more to support the economic engine of this region.
But give you an example. Let me give you an example. Is that I want you to imagine that from a state perspective, if you're the Speaker of the House, is that we saw that the Rams left, mm-hmm. no matter whose fault it was, Jay Nixon, if it was local, if it was all cranky, doesn't matter. Point is that a $700 million settlement comes down to an agency, to a state subdivision that was invested in to create a real opportunity for the region around the Rams. Instead of taking that money and reinvesting in some greater concept, it sort of gets dissipated. And then you have the Convention and Visitors Bureau under the terrible leadership of Kitty Ratcliffe. And you have there, they then try to, in the middle of COVID, to launch this deal. And so you've got these two joint buildings that have both sort of squandered an opportunity to work together. From a state perspective, it's like you had almost $900 million on the table. That would be something the state could look at and invest in. And now you have literally nothing in a substandard convention center and a dome that's falling apart. We need to have incentive. And they were marginalized in that by the city and county after a long partnership.
Okay, well, that I can't speak to the marginalization of the state. But what I would say, going back to that Rams money, if the state, it was divided out. You had the agency, the city, the county, everybody got their piece, okay, instead of having one big pie. If the state would come to the table and match that and participate and say, look, if you get your act together, put it in one pot, we will come and match it.
Hopefully your leadership would be different than Tashara's, because Tashara has, who was, when she was in Jeff City, was collegial. People liked her, got along. But her leadership has been basically to throw names and dispersions mm-hmm. at the state, who's supposed to be a partner, who has resources. This governor is sort of like what came in and wanted to collaborate with St. Louis and the Democrats, and has just gotten the hell kicked out of him, and has very little to do or engagement to do this region like he started, because of the region, not because of him. I'm telling you.
Is that just playing to the base? Is that the only reason for it?
I think that the things you say here, you know, are heard in Jeff City. It's like, well, I guess you don't want our cooperation because it's your way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And again, it has become, I think under Tashara's reign of terror, it's become a situation, I'm being the bad cop here, it's become a situation where, you know, you can't tell us what to do, you can't criticize us, we will tell you when we want you, we'll tell you how much. Well, no one is a partner like that, especially when you're the partner that has the purse strings. You can go to Kansas City and look at their successes, you can go to other places in the state. It's not worth investment here right now because of the leadership.
Well,
not yours.
Well, the leadership that I challenged, you know, for 3 years ago, but what I will say, you know, that is a partnership. The state, the city doesn't exist without the state. Okay, we are a creature of the state. Every power that the city has
Absolutely.
Is bestowed upon the city by the state of Missouri. Okay, that is just a fact of the matter.
By the Constitution of the United
States. Absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't exist without the state. So while I disagree with the state in some fundamental ways, I do think it is absolutely imperative that we work together.
Absolutely. And I do too. I like.
And by the way, the last time I was on the show, I was sitting next to Steve Aleman, a person with whom I consider a very successful.
Well, you're really being dumbed down now with me because Steve is 10 times smarter.
But I mean, the success that they're having in St. Charles is something that we should be looking at. Why that is the case and what can we do in the city to partner with them, but also perhaps to even take some examples from what they're
because,
doing.
Because look, I think that the region is cognizant that when St. Louis is in trouble, it hurts everybody. St. Louis' success helps everybody, even though everybody might want to deny it. A lot of growth in these areas came from St. Louis' success, and some growth in St. Charles has come from St. Louis' failures. But the bottom line is, you can't have a hole in the middle. And to that extent, St. Louis' failure cost the state, and it cost this region. And so we have to have an interest in St. Louis. So to that extent, I'm telling you that there is the interest from the region. There is the interest from the state that wants to collaborate, wants to partner. But I'm telling you that between the tone and the demands, it's not getting done. There is not a willing partnership by the current leadership of the city.
Well, what's frustrating is just a guy, someone who's not involved in this the way you guys are. In my personal life, going back, I think of situations where I had 3 out of 4 things I needed to make something happen. Boy, if I just had the money. Boy, if I just had the partner. If I just had this or that. It seems that we have the things in place. We have the money. We have cooperation, to one degree or another with the state. We have the horses. We have the ideas. I don't understand why we're not taking action.
Karen, let me give you an example, guys. We got a $15 million appropriation to help take down decrepit houses and houses that through the crime commission, mm-hmm. who tries to target neighborhoods that have a high number of vacant homes to get rid of those because it cuts down crime. And it's shown that if you can do that, it saves these neighborhoods, which should be perfect on either social side of the aisle you're on because it saves old neighborhoods. It helps those communities. Not one penny has been spent. 2-3 years now, they can't get one damn house torn down with
that
money.
I'm well aware of all that. I mean, I talked to former Mayor Slay about it and, other folks.
I'd be for appropriation for cleaning up your trash, but I don't think it'd get done.
You're preaching to the choir. I mean,
what do you want to announce today, right now?
I live and breathe by cooperation. When I took on this role as a city alderperson, I was down in Jeff City looking at, bills that were going through that would impact our ability to collect certain tax revenues. And I was contacting the mayor at that time, the mayor's office, saying, what are we doing about this? They had no idea some of the stuff was going on. So I reached out to St. Louis County leadership, the St. Louis Municipal League out there, and I joined the board of directors out there as the first, by the way, member of the board of directors of the St. Louis Municipal League from the city of St. Louis in the 100 years
That's
that
crazy.
Organization has been around. And that the city is the largest municipality.
I have no doubt of your commitment, but look at the strike force. They have a regional strike force with federal, local. The only seat that's empty there is St. Louis City. St. Louis City cops aren't part of that strike force, even though a major part of crime is emanated, or affected in the city of St. Louis, whether it's theirs or other people coming there, it doesn't matter. The point is, they don't participate in a lot of this regionalization. You do, I'm glad. But the leadership that's currently there doesn't seem a need to participate.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some things happening in Jeff City. Welcome back, guys. DGS 423. We're here with Kara Spencer and Dave Barklage. Are we still filibustering in Jefferson City? I haven't checked in lately.
Over the initiative petition reform, they are filibustering. I don't know, as I was coming here, if they have broken, then we'll come back to it. But it is the longer filibuster. I think the Democrats wanted to make sure they left with beating the Freedom Caucus's mm-hmm. Length of time on it.
Mm-hmm. So the way I put this question is going to be a bit leading, but being a former conservative, I never thought of limiting the voice of the people as being a tenet of conservatism.
It is. Look, there's for over 100 years, it's been enshrined in our Constitution. Legislatures are not meant as reform agents. They have checks and balances, so they will never be major reform bodies. When the Pendergast organization got out of control, the corrupt group that was running Kansas City, it was the people that rose up in 38 good government reforms that kicked them out. It was a tax limitation on Hancock, Medicaid expansion, no matter which side you're on. Democrats controlled the state in one way or another until 2004. 2004 was the first time in state history Republicans controlled both houses and the governor's mansion. Yet now, because it is an affront to their management or to their control, they want to get rid of it. Democrats at times have wanted to get control of it too, which means that it's a partisan issue depending on who's in power. But the legislature having the guts to say that we know better. I think Bill Igel said the other night, I know better than democracy. Or no, it was Jim Lemke. I'm sorry, Bill Igel's former chief of staff. And point is that that's my fellow Republicans. I disagree with them. The initiative petition is the way you get major reforms. Women's suffrage, veterans benefits. I can't tell you the number of things. And what's crazy is there's only been 28, I think, successful initiatives since it was passed. So 28 in over 100 years, yet they want to make it more expensive, which means you're only going to allow billionaires to do it, which they are not necessarily change agents. So it is a terribly bad decision by Republicans, and it doesn't make any sense to the right who would want to preserve liberty and democracy.
Well, I couldn't agree more.
No, I couldn't agree more either.
No.
Screw them.
I mean this honestly, what are we missing? Is it just their personal performative nature?
They're afraid of democracy. They are afraid that the majority of Missourians won't agree with them what they want at any given minute on abortion, on guns, or on any other special interests. And those special interests are fueling, they're wagging the tail, wagging the dog. They are, you know, scaring Republicans. And the only way we can protect what we want is that if we take this away. And they're advocating then their fear that what most Republicans should operate, at least I used to believe we did, that we felt we supported what the majority wanted. And therefore, we were right because the majority wanted it. When we get in the mindset that we're trying to protect a minority interest, that's a bad thing. That's a bad trend. There's nothing good that can come from this. And Republicans, literally, if you look at where the growth is, we're talking about growth in the break. The growth is in purple areas. The growth is in St. Louis, Kansas City, core Springfield, core Columbia. And so Republicans are not going to be the majority in the House and the Senate forever. They have been it for 21 years. They've had a good run, 24 years, excuse me, and maybe another 4 to 6 years. But my projections are that we lose the House by the next census. Senate, probably less likely. It may go into the mid-30s. But I'm just telling you, Republicans are setting themselves up to be on the outside of all governance.
I don't think they know how they look.
No,
I think they're just too close to it. I used to think of Democrats as being well-meaning teenagers that their mom and dad went to Vegas and they think they know how to run the House better, and they find out the hard way they don't.
Yeah.
And I thought of conservatives as being the grown-ups. Now they're like my Aunt Gladys. They're just like, you don't want to see them because she tells you you're fat. It's like they become like villains or something.
Look, Kara, you know, I think one of the movements in the cities we've seen a lot more use of initiatives and petitions, mm-hmm. which is a great political trend. And to that regard, even if I don't like the outcome, you know, I still believe in democracy. You have to trust the people, good or bad, even if the people swing one direction
Amen.
Or another.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Amen.
And there's a lot of reforms they could do to IPs to make it more honest, the ballot language, so you're not hiding things. That would be good.
Yeah.
But that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about a pure power grab to shut off anybody having an opinion other than themselves. And if you think about it, the power of lobbyists over that 163 House members, that 34 Senate members, is incredible. But their grip on the public, little to zero.
David Barklage, Kara Spencer, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Dive into all things Cardinals on Cardinals Conversations, your go-to location for exclusive content from KingMOX. Catch it on the Odyssey app or your favorite podcast platform. Stay connected with your team. Cardinals Conversations, where the Redbird talk never stops.
So coming up in the next segment, we are going to feature Rachel Show, going to do a preview of her interview with Ray Hartman, who is running against Ann Wagner, who refuses to come on the DGS, just putting that out there. And so that's what we're going to do next. Rachel's power's out because the transformer blew up and shows she has to go home to no power. And I was saying, at least it's not like last year when I was without power for 4 days during the July 4th holiday when it was like a million degrees. And then I said, but I was only living like my grandparents lived.
Right.
That was there every day. They're not. The power's out. Like, what the hell's power? Like,
sucks to suck.
No air conditioning. No,
it's the worst, dude. I get mad when I lose internet for an hour.
Yeah.
Forget the rest of the power. Like, I have no internet, which means no TV, no games. What am I gonna do?
I can sit there and do nothing. Like, I can just think. And but the worst is trying to sleep with no fan. That I barely slept last night because I need that white noise going.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Can you not use an iPad or something for?
Well,
sounds.
My phone was at like 35%, and I didn't want it to die before I came into work. So
right.
Charging right now, so I'm all charged up by the time I get
home. I would go out to the Jeep and charge my phone for a while.
So you got that, and I've got a bunch of the portable chargers.
Those are nice.
And the new one that I got is solar charging, so it charges itself.
Look at you.
It takes forever to charge, though. Yeah, I know. Well, it's about baseball stuff. I got to have all that stuff to keep the iPads rolling when we're keeping score.
Gotcha.
I'm not actually a prepper.
I'm about to turn into a prepper.
I know. Every time something bad like that happens, I'm like, I need to prep for something.
Well, the thing is like all my food and stuff in my fridge, it's been long enough now that like we moved some to coolers, but we're going to lose a lot of food. And it's like, well, what am I going to eat tonight? I can't microwave anything. I can't heat anything up in the oven. I guess I'm going to go by, you know, not McDonald's because I'm mad at them. Chick-fil-A or something like that.
Yeah, go out to eat some. Go to Red Lobster.
There you go.
What an amazing idea.
They have air conditioning.
Probably a good night on a Tuesday, too. You probably get, you know.
Plus, they don't give a rat's ass. They're going out of business. They'll give you all the cheddar biscuits you want.
If you go just two people, will they give you the five biscuits?
They'll give you three. One for each of us and one for the table.
Son of a...
Yep.
They're just causing problems.
Don't like it.
Now, we talked yesterday about how anachronistic beauty pageants seem.
Yeah.
Don't you feel the same way about Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition?
Yes.
Gail King is
this
the cover
girls.
Lady.
Yeah.
Gail King, Oprah's best friend?
Yep.
Yeah. I haven't paid attention to, like, it's still a thing. I don't get it. Like, when I was 18, it was a big deal. Everybody's like, oh, Elle McPherson's on there. Like, who cares? Now, I'm like,
You guys talked creepy.
I know. We were weird. And when you're a teenage boy, you're weird.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, good for Gail King. She's 69 years old. She looks great. But that's the whole thing. It's like, if she didn't look great, she wouldn't get the cover. But they want the credit for, like, we're almost 70-year-old woman. She's on the cover. Well, she's a bit of an anomaly.
50.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just doesn't make a ton of sense.
I don't know. Would you go to a 70-year-old man? You know, would you go to Tommy Tuberville and be like, just take your shirt off?
No, because men are weird and they'll buy the magazine. Like for the women's ones.
Yeah, I don't know of any women who are like, yes, Joe Biden.
Yeah, let's get, yeah.
I hope he shows up in like a sexy fireman's calendar. Like, I don't know.
No, you've thought of that one.
It was on the top of my mind.
It was right on the tip of your tongue.
First thing right out of your mouth.
I mean, what do we want to see him in? Like a firefighter outfit or something? Am I right?
You know, he doesn't have to wear a Speedo, although.
Speedo and one of those firefighter hats? Everyone got it? Mr. Burns' body?
Yes. I'm Michael Calhoun. This is KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
All right, I'm here with Ray Hartman. He's a Democrat running for the 2nd Congressional District. You also know him from Donnybrook, the Riverfront Times, Substack, and many other places, even a KMOX alum. So, Ray, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
Tell me a little bit about your time on KMOX. We were talking about it a little bit off air, but recap for my listeners. I know they'd be interested in that.
It was a little ridiculous. I mean, I of course, my first business I started, which was the business that we had a newspaper called Profile St. Louis that was the forerunner to the Riverfront Times. I started when I was 24. Mm-hmm. I had just come from working for Kit Bond as his speechwriter in Jeff City, and we lost the election. Or, as I like to say, the voters wanted us back in the private sector. And the great, great Jack Carney had me on for 4 hours on his program, which at the time had a monstrous audience. And so that, because we put Jack on the cover of our first newspaper, a story I wrote. So my connection to say KMOX goes that far back, and he was wonderful to me. And I've always been I've had different connections to the station. For 10 years, Martin Dugan and I, our late great provocateur, did a Point Counterpoint on KMOX. So I think many listeners might remember that. We were on for about 10 years, a little 2 minutes yelling at each other about the issue. So that was my main connection. But in around the turn of the century, I was approached, and I guess flattered, to do the KMOX evening specials, which were on for 2 hours in the evenings during weekdays. And it's either good news or bad news. I was ridiculously flattered. I don't even know if flattered's the right word. To be associated with three rotating hosts. And one of them was me. The other was Bob Costas. Mm-hmm. And the third was a guy named Jack Buck. And he was paired with Charlie Spoonhauer. So if you can imagine these two Hall of Fame giants and me, it's like, what am I doing in this movie, a commercial, you know? And they, of course, they're both, Costas still a good friend. And I, of course, Jack was wonderful to me and Charlie. But it was a little, what was bizarre about it was we had to get our own guests. And I always like to tell people, Bob Costas had, you know, the Dalai Lama in his speed dial. And Jack Buck could get anybody on the phone. I mean, anybody. And the first shows I remember were the very first shows. We each had our own two-hour show. Jack Buck talked to Stan Musial, and Bob Costas talked to Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball, and I had to scramble to get three ex-mayors, and they were great. I mean, Vince Schabel, Freeman Bosley Jr., and Jim Conway agreed to sit down in the same interview, which was fun, but point was, I was a little outclassed, out of my element, but I've had great memories and associations with so many people. The late, great Ann Keefe was a mentor of mine from Game. So much, I feel connected to KMOX. It's a very special station.
You had brought up Donnybrook. So we connected at Donnie Bash.
Right.
You were there handing out cards for your congressional campaign. Right. How was that for you emotionally after doing that for so long, being at that show and not being on stage?
It was fine. This is my family. I mean, I was on the air for 37 years, and all 37 with Bill McClellan, of course, and 20 plus with most of the others, Charlie Brennan. Another great name from KMOX, mm-hmm. and Wendy Weiss and Alvin Reed have all been on 15, 20 years or more, Charlie more than that. And it was fun. I mean, it was the first, you know, we had done 16 Donnie Bashes, something like that. So it was always a great time to be on a stage as a ham. Emotionally, it was fine. It was just, they did a great job. So it was like, you know, I kidded them. I said, you guys are going to start promoting this as the new improved Donnybrook now that I'm gone. They did a great job, and they still are. I actually watch it some, but it wasn't difficult emotionally. It was a little less, I wouldn't say it's stressful to be on there, but you have to kind of, you get kind of wound up. And
right.
For me, it was, of course, an unusual position to be in, to be handing out campaign cards, but it was a good run, and 37 years is a reasonable amount of time to be in the same place on a dial.
Absolutely. What was that decision like whenever you were like, okay, I've got to step away? Was that emotionally difficult?
No, it really wasn't, only because I am excited about what I'm doing.
Right.
I mean, yes, I mean, being away from my friends every week is mostly, is you know, it's kind of sad. I mean, because we really are close. We didn't hang out so much other than at the station, but you get used to seeing people.
Right.
And having combat with them and so forth. No, I mean, so I missed them. But as far as the this is such an interesting challenge for me. I mean, it's like starting a new company. And I tell people, I wake up feeling like I'm 24 again, starting the RFT. On the other hand, I take about two or three steps. And let's just say I ran 10 marathons and I'm not ready to run one right now. But it's fine. And it's really, I think it's. I'm really excited about doing it. I think this is a really critical time. And we say that every 4 years, but this election, I think more than any other, we may have cried wolf on previous elections. Mm. I think one of the reasons I got in is I feel this is a pivotal time for our country. And I have been in the public eye for a long time. And I think people know me. When a lot of people come up to me at the grocery store, have over the years, say, well, I don't always agree with you, but I like your show, or I like the way you say it, which is the best compliment somebody can give me. And I'm sort of running as that guy. I'm running to to be, I don't think I've said this, not this is a breaking news, but if I were elected to Congress, and I hope to be in November, one of the first things I'd want to do is apply for something called the Problem Solvers Caucus. I don't know if I'd get in because they vote people in. It's about 30 or 40 members of the House who work across the aisle together, Republicans and Democrats. They got to vote you in, so I don't know if they'd vote me in right away, but I'd be pounding their door down because that's my brand. I mean, I worked as a speechwriter for Kit Bond, who was a Republican in the 70s, and people know me as being very passionate, although I'm certainly a lot closer to the political center, I think, than I was in the early days. He's this wild liberal, and I'm still happy to answer to that adjective, but I think what we need more than ever is somebody who'll listen to the other side and who's accessible to the voters.
All right, guys, that's a little preview of my interview with Ray Hartman. Check out the whole thing Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on KMOX, or podcast the show whenever it drops, also on Saturday morning. And I appreciate everyone who checks out the Rachel Zimmerman Show. Thanks, and we'll be back with the DGS tomorrow.